and it's April 20th. With us, Senator Stevens, Senator Steakins, Senator Davis, and myself, Bundy. Today, we have two previously heard bills, SB 439, Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Act, and SB 282, Broadcast Promoting Charitable Gaming, and three new bills, SB 315, HB 31, and HB 338. We'll start with HB 439, the Interstate Insurance Product. Staff from Representative Coghill is here, and for the record, please.
Yes, for the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Reneva Moss, Legislative Aide for Representative Coghill.
And I have no questions. You want to add anything more to the bill?
No, Mr. Chairman, just that the industry came to us asking to give them an opportunity to maybe save some money on these insurance policies by conforming it on a national level. Also, I should stress that one of the reasons Representative Coghill got involved in this legislation is because there are rumblings in Washington, D.C. that the feds would like to get into the action, and this is one way to avoid it.
And I see the Director of Division of Insurance is here. Linda, would you like to make any comments, additional comments on House Bill 439, the Interstate? Sure. Right. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to comment on House Bill 439? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. I have no amendments. Discussion among the committee members?
Chairman, I'd move CS for House Bill number 439 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Jane?
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Steakins?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. So, House Bill 439 is on its way and can join that fishing bill that he was working on this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That brings us now to Senate Bill 282, an equity bill. We heard this last time. There were some interesting differences as to who can discuss Alaska's charitable gaming in the media or not. We have Senator Stevens' staff with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Letch, staff to Senator Gary Stevens, District R. Back to answer any questions you may have on Senate Bill 282, and I believe we have a representative from the Department of Revenue here, to Jeff Prather. Mm-hmm. Is that you?
Yeah.
To answer specific questions that are involving the gaming issue. Be happy to entertain any questions at this time.
I don't see any questions at this time. I have heard from some, for just committee information, heard from some folks in the radio broadcast industry that are a little vexed about the unfairness of the current situation, and it does seem just an equity bill. But, so, does committee have questions for either Mr. Letch or Department of Revenue?
Mr. Chairman, wasn't it a question that was asked by Senator Ellis about the agency, about these groups being nonprofit, 501(c)(3), was that cleared up?
I don't recall the question, Jane.
It's right here. Outside Raffles, outside of the state.
Oh, you mean folks from that are non-residents?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I did get some information from Mr. Letch, and outside raffles by nonprofits would be able to advertise their raffles for lottery in Alaska in newspapers and on the radio. But they'd have to be nonprofits. So we're probably not going to hear advertisements for Powerball, that sort of thing. Mr. Bookie is on line. Did you have any comments you would like to make, Mr. Bookie?
I appreciate this committee's time. The last time I testified, and I don't want to take this any longer. So if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them, but I have no new testimony.
All right. Is there anyone else like to testify on SB 282? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony. I have no amendments. Will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill 282 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Kane.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Bundy?
Yes. So 282 is on its way. We are production oriented here. That brings us to Senate Bill 315, Disposition of Unredeemed Property, and we have represented the bill's sponsor here. Welcome.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Annette Skibinski, staff to Senator Cowdery. Senate Bill 315 has to do with property that is left at a pawn shop unclaimed past the unredeemed property deadline. There's mailers that go out and explain when this deadline is to people. Currently, there's a pawn loan limit of $500, which was set 13 years ago, and this bill does not seek to change that limit at all. What it does, however, is bring the disparity in the ratio back to the original intent between pawn loan limits and unredeemed property. The ratio was twice the pawn loan limit originally. And since then, the loan limit has changed, but the unredeemed property limit has not. So it would raise it to twice the loan limit, which would, right now, it's $400. That would raise it to $1,000 right now, but the language actually says twice the loan limit. So the ratio maintains. And it has an immediate effective date.
Okay, we do have in our packets information from the sponsor showing the loan limits from 1949 to the present. And as I understand the process, someone has pawned a piece of property, say for $100. Under current law, they could go back and get an additional loan up to $400. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know that. Okay,
if they already had $100, they'd get another $300 for up to $400.
Because this was Pawn Shop 101 for me, too, I made up little cards.
Okay.
And for instance, if I took in a ring, let's just say the ring had a retail value at the jewelry store of $1,200,
mm-hmm.
the pawn shop could loan me a maximum of $500 on that ring. 60 days goes by, and I have not claimed my property or made any interest payments on it. The pawn shop has a right to sell that ring. They can sell that ring, let's say, for $700. They loan me $500 on it. It's worth $1,200, brand new at the jewelry store. They can sell it. Let's say they sell it for $700. And you probably won't be able to see this equation, but currently, anything that they make over $400, they would have to split the profits with me, the person who bought the ring in and never claimed it, even though they loaned me $500 on it. So they have to sell this ring that they loaned me $500 on for at least $600 just to get their $500 back. So what this Senate Bill 315 does is change the ratio back to the original ratio. When the pawn loan limit was $200 back in 1981, and the unredeemed property provision was $400, twice the loan limit. So I don't know if you can.
Well, and let me just go through it so that I make sure I understand. Under existing law, you're not changing the notion that you can unredeemed property can be sold. You're just changing the existing law as to the amount that can be charged for the unredeemed property.
Senator Bundy, this changes the amount at which the unredeemed property, the sale, the dollar amount at which the sale of the unredeemed property is split with the pawner.
So I thought I understood it. I pawned something. I don't redeem it. The pawn shop owner sells the property for more than I pawned it for. And the underlying law is that you have to split that with the person that pawned the...
Currently, if the pawn shop sells it for more than $400, then they have to split it 50%.
Okay. Now, and you would change the limit to 1,000. So if they sell it then for $1,200, then the $200 in excess of 1,000, they'd have to split that.
Correct.
Okay. Now, I think we're on the same track. All right. Questions for Annette? Mr. Sniffen is online, and would you like to testify on this bill, Mr. Sniffen?
Senator Bundy, yes, I would, if you would indulge me just for a second.
All right.
Yes. My name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Department of Law, and we have spoken with the sponsors of the bill and with the some of the pawnbrokers about the language here, and we don't have any problems with this language at all. We have one suggestion, and that is to require a notification provision in the bill that alerts consumers to the fact that this is the consequence of your failure to comply with the terms of your loan. And I actually have some proposed language that we could add to this very quickly. I certainly don't want to hold this bill up today and don't want to interfere with that at all. And so if there's a way I can make a conceptual amendment or have one of the sponsors perhaps make an amendment to add that language, that would be terrific.
Well, what I think I'd like to do is we'll just put the bill on the bottom of our stack. We still have considerable time to meet yet today. If you could fax that language to us, then we could deal with it in writing. That reduces some confusion. Would that work for you?
Senator Bundy, yes, that does. I'll do that right now, and I will actually stay online for the rest of the hearing as well. So I'll get to that right now. Thank you.
Okay, just a moment. Let me, Jane, what would we use for a fax number?
Let's use ours, 465-3871.
Yeah, if you'd fax it to 465-3871.
Yes, sir, I certainly will.
Okay, we'll set 315 aside for the moment until we get potential amendment language, and Annette, if you'd take a look at that then, and we'll get back to it. All right, then that brings us to House Bill 31, Workers' Comp, a disease presumption, and do we have anyone from the bill sponsor here? Not seeing the bill sponsor here, we will set that aside and move on to House Bill 338. Mr. Egan, I want to let you know the bill that I think you're interested in has already passed from committee.
Yes.
So we have then before us House Bill 338. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
For the record, Lilania Snyder, staff to Representative Chenault. Explosive handlers bill. Currently, the Department of Labor has the authority to issue a license known as a certificate of fitness to explosive handlers in Alaska. The explosive handler license applicants are required to submit a criminal background check within Alaska. However, this check does not require fingerprints to verify proper ID and does not capture criminal acts the applicant may have committed in other states. HB 338 would give the Departments of Labor and Public Safety the authority to perform this fingerprint-based nationwide criminal history search. And that sums up the bill.
Is Representative Chenault aware that this could really mess up 4th of July on the North Road? All right. Questions for the bill sponsor? We do have Gray Mitchell here from Department of Labor to testify. And we'll excuse you for a moment. And Gray, you'd like to join us? Welcome.
Thank you. Gray Mitchell, I'm the Director of Labor Standards and Safety at Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And this, we're in support of this bill. It's a common sense piece of legislation. We issue about 180 licenses to explosive handlers and construction around the state. And currently we don't have any statutory authority to do a criminal background check on these individuals. We kind of ask them nicely to provide us with a state background check, but it's not a fingerprint verified check, and it's not mandated by law. So if someone challenged us, we'd be hard pressed to force them to provide that information to us. These explosive handlers, it doesn't include people who are dealing with fireworks or mining or some of these other types of activities where explosives are used. So it really only applies to construction, which is what we have jurisdiction over at the Department of Labor. But we figure since we're issuing licenses to these people, we owe it to the public safety to make sure that they have clean criminal records. And this legislation would give us the authority to do that.
I suspect in the era in which we are now living, we want to make sure that there aren't people who have criminal intent handling explosives. All right, questions for Mr. Mitchell? Seeing none, is there anyone else like to testify on House Bill 338? This seems to be a relatively simple bill. If the committee is comfortable, we could take a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House Bill 338 from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Jane.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Seekins.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Senator Bundy.
Yes. So 338's on its way. I'm still looking forward to 4th of July on the North Road. Yeah.
Anderson's office has been contacted, so they should be screaming down the city.
Okay. We'll stand at ease for a moment.
It's being tracked now.
That brings
Thank you,
us
Mr. Chair.
To House Bill 31. Get my papers straightened out. For the record.
Thank you. Tom Anderson, District 19. Thank you for the opportunity to present the bill to my friends here. I was in Judiciary. We're listening to the Stranded Gas Act. Yet another bill on that. So very exciting. I hate to leave it. House Bill 31, as you're aware, just by the subject matter and the title, has to do with workers' compensation for firefighters and first responders. These folks are basically enduring exposure on a daily basis to stress, smoke, heat, various toxic substances, as we note in the sponsor statement. And as a result, they are more likely, in our opinion, medical opinion and insurance claim opinion, to contract heart disease, cancer, and other problems like that. As firefighters assume the role of the state's leading providers of emergency medical services, they are also exposed to infectious diseases, obviously, if they have to, let's say, make an injection, things like AIDS and hepatitis. In recognition of this linkage, 38 states have enacted a presumptive disability law, which presumes that cardiovascular diseases, certain cancers, and infectious diseases are job-related for purposes of workers' compensation, and, of course, disability retirement, unless proven otherwise. No such law covers firefighters employed in Alaska. Firefighter Association and some other folks came to me and said, hey, would you mind willing as Chairman of Labor and Commerce to push this bill? We think it's fair, very cost effective in the context that so few firefighters have ever made this claim. Looking at the three committee members and knowing their philosophies, I wouldn't bring to you something that I thought would cost the state or the risk pool an excessive amount of money. We have, from the Division of Insurance, not necessarily an endorsement, but a viewpoint that it will not affect the risk pool. And Representative Roper made sure that that was articulated before, obviously, he released it to the House floor. As you're aware, he's a big scrutinizer of anything that might cost money to the state, especially insurance-related, which is his expertise. Most states have acknowledged that the occupational hazards attributed to firefighting have presumptive disability laws, and that's why I think 38 other states have some form of this. Alaska firefighters regularly respond to hazmat incidences involving chemical, radiological, and biological hazards. And again, they don't have this benefit. Presumably, you'll have questions like, well, wait a minute. I mean, how expansive is this? Someone gets lung cancer. I can see it if they've been fighting fires. But someone else, maybe a firefighter, gets prostate disease. How would that have any relation to putting out a fire? And you will see that not every cancer is covered in this, and you will also see by the list on page 2 that they're pretty exposure specific. And I think there's a firefighter online, I hope there is, at least in the testimony through the House, that there are several folks, I'll close with several firefighters that have, very few actually, but that have been exposed over the course of their career to enough fires and chemicals that suddenly one had brain cancer, one had bladder cancer, and I believe most of those type cancers are hereditary. Sometimes they're not. But that being said, these didn't have that in their hereditary records, and suddenly they had it. And it was believed that it was from their service, and at least one of them wasn't covered. So that hence the bill and making sure that these folks don't have to endure that, and at least they know they're covered. It's also a good recruitment tool if men and women trying to get on to the forces of our fire departments throughout the state know that at least they have this one benefit should, God forbid, they acquire one of these diseases. So that's my presentation. I would also ask if you get into any real detailed questions, you let me refer to the firemen who know the bill a little bit better than I do.
We have some people online that would like to testify. Of course, knowing my affection for tobacco, my obvious question is, if a smoker would receive, could they receive benefits under this if they received lung cancer while they were... And we're a firefighter?
Mr. Chair, I know the firefighter, I haven't read the latest version here, but I don't think that qualifies if they're a smoker, if they smoke tobacco. And that's a good question. In fact, I would say, Heath's helping me here, I would add that as an amendment if that was the case. Yeah, page 3, lines 16 to 18. For purposes of the non-application, the nature and quantity of a person's tobacco product use, the standards adopted under this paragraph shall use or be based on existing medical research. Hey, I'm a smoker. God, I got lung cancer. But hey, I've been a fireman for over 10 years. You're not covered.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Representative Anderson? Okay, seeing none at this time, we can let you go back to your other duties if you like.
Please don't.
And we'll take the online testimony. Here in Juneau, Jeff Bush, like to comment? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jeff Bush. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Public Entity Insurance. I'm here to testify in opposition to this piece of legislation. Our organization is a nonprofit pool that insures approximately 18 municipalities in Alaska, and we have about, at our latest count, about 150 personnel at those municipalities that would be affected by this piece of legislation, would be covered by it. The reason I'm going to be very brief is because you have in your packet a letter from Kevin Smith from the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association. They are the other pool that does municipal insurance, and he's done a very good job of summarizing our objections to this piece of legislation. It's purely financial. I have to say that it's going to affect the insurance rates for the municipalities in Alaska. The reason that it won't affect the risk pool, as you just heard the sponsor say, is because the risk pool, because municipalities and the state are not insured by the risk pool in this state. They're insured essentially as self-insurance pools, or as the larger municipalities are insured self-insured by themselves. So it is true that it won't affect the risk pool. It will affect the rates for municipalities. And my major concern is the fact that the workers' compensation system, as we all know, is designed right now with a lot of presumptions in favor of coverage, and in most cases there is coverage. What this bill is doing is in fact extending that workers' compensation coverage, and will extend it to some cases, we don't know how many, where the disease that the person develops is truly not work-related. It may be from any other cause. It's giving a presumption for firefighters and other emergency personnel that people in other occupations don't have, which is if you happen to develop this disease for some other reason, it will be covered nonetheless. The cost, as pointed out by Mr. Smith, is estimated to be 10 to 20%. We really don't know, but 10 to 20% increase for those covered employees, and that's a significant amount of money. There's also other costs involved. I think maybe perhaps one of the more significant costs is going to be the increased litigation that this is going to cause, because we're going to have it creates a situation or a system that's going to require a lot of litigation to sort out when the presumption is going to apply and when it's not going to apply. That's pointed out actually by the state risk management in their fiscal note. There's also going to be a cost because all firefighters and emergency personnel are going to have to go through medical screenings in order to pre-qualify for this coverage. And that's been estimated at as much as $8 million cost to Alaska municipalities in the first year. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but we are just concerned with the cost of the workers' compensation system in general. Workers' compensation costs are always going up. They're going up for municipalities just like they are for everyone else, and this just adds to the cost for the municipalities.
This pre-screening cost would not be borne by the employee or potential employee?
Not as the bill's written right now, as far as I know, it would be the municipality.
Okay, thank you. And would point out that there are two letters in the members' packets, one from that was referenced from the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association, and the other from the National Council on Compensation Insurance. Questions for Mr. Bush? Seeing none, thank you.
Chairman.
Going online now, Tom Bodecker.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Tom Bodecker. I'm from Kenai LIO. I am the city manager in Soldotna, Alaska, and I wanted to offer a couple of comments on this bill. I have some concerns with the bill. In general, anytime you extend a presumption that an exposure occurred during employment, when there is as much chance of exposure off duty or in other professions or tasks, I think that's a concern in general nature. But very specifically here, I think that the premise is that firefighters are exposed on a greater degree than other groups and have a higher risk. But I think you'll find that persons such as emergency room physicians, emergency room staff, hospital lab technicians, certain chemical workers have the same greatest exposure. And if you're going to go on the basis of an exposure that's unique, then those groups, are they next to be extended this kind of presumption? I think it's a door that's best left unopened at this time. Very clearly, the shift, the sponsor had indicated that the number of people that would apply for this are very minimal because of claims in the past. Well, that's because there wasn't a presumption in their favor, and I think that will change very significantly if this goes forward with this. I also have some qu- questions about the applicability to prior employment when they had a medical exam. Typical hiring medical exam does not screen for cancer. That would impose a significantly different requirement and expense for pre-employment physicals on a municipality that was hiring this, and very unlikely not going to turn anything up because you can't do that kind of detailed analysis for all the exposures. You're not going to do CAT scans and other blood tests for leukemia and everything as part of a pre-employment physical. Those are geared for another place, another purpose. And very quite clearly, even if in the future you gauge those as part of your pre-employment physical, that wasn't done in the past. So previous employment physicals did not screen for cancer, yet because you had a prior exam that didn't show cancer or didn't indicate any, they'd be covered. So I have some concerns with that, just the way this bill would apply and the potential for application. And finally, I do not think that there is any clear evidence in this case that there is a greater exposure risk in this particular group than there are with other particular employment groups out there. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. We'll move off net now to Mike David Dunn.
Chairman Bundy and members of the committee, this is Mike Davidson for the record. I'm the legislative liaison for the Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. I'm also a firefighter in Anchorage, Alaska. I appreciate you taking the time to hear our testimony today and to listen to this bill. I should stress this is a very, very important bill for firefighters and emergency service workers in Alaska. I asked, along with my organization, that this bill be introduced through sponsor Tom Anderson a few years ago after hearing related to me several problems with people pursuing claims for certain types of illnesses and diseases under the current workers' compensation system. I'd note I'm looking at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development Report of Occupational Injury or Illness form, and box 9 of that form asks one to identify the date of their injury or exposure to disease. As you can imagine, the problem with many of the diseases we're discussing here is they don't occur from a singular exposure on a singular date. They're the product of, in some cases, years and years of exposures to known carcinogens that are causing us these problems. In other cases, for things such as bloodborne pathogens, the problem we encounter is oftentimes we're exposed and we aren't even aware of that exposure till after the fact. So when I go to someone's room, in some dark environment and, they're no longer breathing, I'm trying to get them out of the room, oftentimes they may have to kneel on the bed or something to remove them. It may only be later that I discover that bed was soaked in some sort of body fluid or something that I didn't even identify at the time. I noticed there was some testimony about the rates at which people acquire these, and I'll read you some figures for the cancers. You'll note many of the figures that I read compare firefighters to police officers, and the reason they do that is there's what's known as the healthy worker effect. So when you compare worker populaces, you want to compare them to other workers that I guess I would put are of similar health. And so what they found is firefighters in modern America are very health conscious. We have elaborate programs we've instituted to protect our health, so we tend to be healthier than the average populace. So often they'll compare us to another healthy populace, which is generally identified as law enforcement or military personnel. Firefighters in America acquire and unfortunately die of brain cancer at a rate that's 88% greater than police officers or 109% greater rate than the normal populace. As firefighters, we acquire bladder cancer at a 111% greater rate than police and a 319% greater rate than the average populace. Firefighters acquire non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at 227% greater rate than police. We acquire leukemia at 270% of a greater rate than the police. We require skin cancer at nearly three times a greater rate than the average populace. So I think you can see we have studies that have concluded all of those. Unfortunately for me in this occupation, what it boils down to is there's a much, much greater chance of me acquiring certain types of cancers than there is for any other known occupation in the populace. You'll see when you look at the bill, we tried very hard to make this a very defined bill so that there wasn't the opportunity for rampant abuse. You'll note things like that to qualify for the cancer provisions, you have to have served at least 10 years as a firefighter because we weren't able to find documented cases of known exposures and cancers and under that period. You'll also note that the presumptive coverage only extends for a certain period of time after you've worked, not to exceed 60 months and based on your years of work. As Senator Bundy pointed out, we are very clear to establish an exclusion for known tobacco users. Certainly, we're not asking in any way that people who have obviously very likely acquired their illness in some other route be covered. And you'll also notice that we put in the ability for the employer to refute any of these claims with a preponderance of evidence, including the use of tobacco products, physical fitness, weight, lifestyle, heredity factors, and exposure from other employment or non-employment activities. I know there's a lot of discussion over the physicals. I'll have you note the bill does not require any employer to provide physicals. Whether the employer chooses to provide physicals or not is entirely up to that employer. What it does say is you don't qualify for the presumption if you haven't had an entry-level physical. I've talked with several folks from some of the cities about that and told them that if they thought that the physical portion in there was somehow undue, that from my personal standpoint, I'd be happy to take it out, but I think that provides a tremendous amount of protection to the employer because it says that the person has been screened not so much for the cancers but for the contagious diseases prior to beginning their employment, so we can establish a baseline that they don't have that disease. I should add that in most of the registered fire service organizations in Alaska, as soon as an employee fills out an exposure report or receives a potential exposure, it's generally my experience that the responsible employers immediately initiate a baseline level blood test and exposure tox screen to determine what the employee's level was prior to that exposure, if possible. But I noted that some of the other testifiers said that this would significantly increase employers' costs due to providing mandatory physicals, and the bill certainly does not state that there will be mandatory physicals. It simply says that the employee doesn't qualify for the presumption without those. I noted that there was discussion of increased litigation. I would argue exactly the opposite. I think this bill will provide decreased litigation. Currently, when our members have suffered from these illnesses, which in almost all cases are terminal illnesses, they've had to spend the final months of their lives essentially fighting the system, and it's been a very expensive process on both sides of that fight as we try to establish the exact date or incident in which they were somehow exposed to a chemical byproduct of combustion, for instance, that caused this terrible illness. The reality is it's not as simple as a single date or a single event. It's a cumulative exposure to toxins over an extended period of time in employment. I noted that there was discussion that other occupations are exposed to these type things. Will this set off some kind of domino effect where other occupations ask for this? I would note that in most states, including Alaska, there's legal principle referred to as the fireman's rule. An example of this is the 2002 Alaska Supreme Court decision Moody versus Delta Western that Justice Matthews authored, in which he discusses fireman's rule. But essentially what the fireman's rule says is that because firefighters and police officers are asked to respond to situations that are beyond their control, that they're afforded less protection when arriving at those situations than other occupations, and because of that they deserve increased protections from the results of that response. We recognize that we aren't the only hazardous occupation around, that many other occupations like steel workers, oil rig workers, nurses, and even road construction workers have inherent risks in their job. However, the majority of those jobs are in trades that are regulated by OSHA or NIOSH, which means that there are controls in place to minimize their exposures. In other words, there's time in these occupations to set into place the engineering controls to protect those workers because they can stop if they need to and have that reevaluated by OSHA or NIOSH so we can build better engineering controls. Although we certainly have many engineering controls in my profession, and we've taken great degrees to minimize our exposure to these byproducts every opportunity, it's impossible to eliminate them. Generally, the route of exposure that we see nowadays is one that's hard to eliminate, and that's through the largest organ system in your body, which is your skin. So when we come into people's houses, we're in a smoky environment, all that smoke is a toxin. In almost all cases, it contains known carcinogens. And despite wearing respiratory protection and all sorts of elaborate clothing, we still have it come in contact, which is partially why we see some of our biggest problems in places like the bladder area, where we have sweat mixing with these toxic byproducts and increase in the skin absorption rates. Again, In other occupations, there's the opportunity to spend a tremendous amount of time putting into place these engineering controls and evaluating the entire process. For us, unfortunately, when I arrive at a house or structure on fire and I'm being asked to go in to save someone that's in that house, I have very little time to evaluate the situation in a holistic view. Instead, I have a very brief period of time to attempt to effect that rescue in the very safest way possible. But again, unfortunately, because of the situations we're placed in, we're asked to take increased risk, and that's what the fireman rule recognizes, is that in the state of Alaska anyway, it's been upheld that that should come with increased protection from those risks we have to take. So in closing, I would like to say that this is a very, very important bill to our membership. Fortunately, there's been very few people historically that would actually be impacted by this bill that we're aware of. But for the very small number that would be impacted, it's a tremendous impact. It's horrific to their families to even discover they have these illnesses. It's even more terrifying to the families when, upon being told that they have these illnesses, we have to explain to them that they may not receive coverage from the workers' compensation system because we can't establish the exact route of exposure, date of exposure for this illness. You know, to try and explain to them things like the financial ramification of a change like this, when they're looking at people like me saying, well, the ramification for us is my husband or wife's going to die from this illness, and it's probably going to happen in a very short period of time, and then to have those final months of their life be spent trying to fight in a system like this, I think is completely unfair, and that's what we're hoping to rectify with this bill. Certainly, I'm available for questions if anyone on the committee has them.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't see any questions at this time. Continuing off net, Kevin Smith, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Smith. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League's Joint Insurance Association. The Joint Insurance Association is a not-for-profit self-insurance mechanism for cities, boroughs, and school districts in Alaska. And we represent 146 municipalities, school districts, and boroughs. You have in your packet a letter from me that I think clearly outlines most of the position. I guess I'd like to just comment that the bill, as drafted, really turns the presumption on its head. The proposed legislation changes the framework, but only for certain employees and certain conditions. As it now stands, a presumption exists in favor of compensability on all claims. The presumption is overcome by substantial evidence to the contrary. The employee must then prove that the claim by a must prove their claim by a preponderance of the evidence. So if the presumption is rebutted, then the board weighs the evidence. That's the Alaska Workers' Comp Board weighs the evidence to determine if the employee has proven the claim by a preponderance. House Bill 31, however, establishes that for certain occupations, the presumption for certain diseases can only be overcome by a preponderance of the evidence. For the employees, I guess what I'm saying is that this requires weighing of the evidence at the presumption stage, contrary to 25 to 30 years of Supreme Court cases stating the evidence is weighed only after the presumption has been rebutted, not before it. Under the standard envisioned in HB 31, the employer must disprove the claim by a preponderance to avoid the presumption. Thus, it shifts the burden of proof from the plaintiff to the defendant, making the employer disprove a claim rather than making the employee prove one. It's a form of strict liability that the employer will carry the burden of proof. So the law does not make a party prove a negative for a very good reason. Rather, the law requires that the party asserting the claim prove that they're entitled to a remedy they seek, as it's virtually impossible to prove that a party is not entitled to it. The workers' comp system that we have just only begun to fix already covers claims that are clearly work-related. But the stuff contemplated in HB 31 has, at its core, many lifestyle and hereditary sort of causes. I just recently read a National Fire Protection Association study that shows that 75% of the heart attacks, or 75% of fatalities in fire service are heart attacks, and that most of these guys had pre-existing conditions. It was really a call to arms for fire departments to start recruiting people in better condition. So, for example, if somebody has a heart attack when they're picking up a book, it's they would be covered under House Bill 31. If they're a firefighter and they're picking up a book and they have a heart attack, they're covered automatically. No consideration to diet, exercise, heredity, any of that. It'll just be presumed that it's covered. Also, I've heard the comment that 38 other states have bills like this. I remember growing up here that we don't really give a darn how they do it outside. 38, in fact, I think it's about half that. Many of the states have negotiated in their pension agreements language like this, but as in terms of actual workers' compensation laws, the real number is somewhere lower than that. So like I say, you've got the letter. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question. You're involved with the Joint Insurance Association. Do firefighters have traditional health insurance?
Yes, generally, particularly the career firefighters, their traditional health insurance is provided by the employer. So there should be coverage for these kind of things, as there would be for employees, for all municipal employees. I'm sure that we have all had friends and family members that have got cancer or even died from cancer. Many of them never touched a cigarette. Many of them lived stellar lifestyles. This happens. And to just presume that it's work-related, I think, is particularly at a time when we're trying to fix the workers' compensation system and we don't even know the results aren't in on that, I think the timing is poor.
All right, thank you. I don't see any additional questions. That will take us to Dave Tellerico. Am I somewhere close there, Mayor?
Yes, you are, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank the committee for hearing me today. I do consider our firefighters, EMS personnel, and our police people to be the salt of the earth, no question about it. It certainly wouldn't be a personal thing, but I would like to echo some of the sentiments presented by Mr. Smith. Our workers' compensation, traditionally in the way that we've always tried to operate it, would cover any legitimate injuries that are on-the-job injuries for all folks across the work spectrum that are covered by workman's comp. And I guess, just to make this short, I think what we're really looking at, more so to bring this into perspective, is a matter of accurate record-keeping. The presumption that some of the things that are in the bill would be presumed to be caused by the job, I think, is somewhat of a stretch. I'm particularly troubled by Section C. You know, we're all human beings, and sometimes people make some very poor lifestyle choices. So just to wrap this up very fast, Mr. Chairman, I am opposed to this bill.
All right, thank you very much. I don't see any questions. This is an interesting bill and has some controversy, so we will set it aside and let the committee members have more time to review the issues. And that will bring us back before us Senate Bill 315 and a proposed amendment. Annette.
Once again, this is Annette Skabinski with Senator Cowdery's office. And Department of Law and Commerce and the pawnbrokers and the sponsor have all looked at this amendment, talked about it, and feel fine with it being offered and amended into the bill.
All right. I'll label this amendment number one. Begins at the end of Section 1. At the time of the loan, the pawnbroker shall also provide notice to the pledgor that the pawnbroker will retain the amount allowed by this section if the property is sold. Any objections to amendment number one? Seeing none, we've adopted amendment number one. That brings us the bill back before us as amended. Anyone else like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill or House Bill 31. Senate Bill 315 from committee.
Jane?
With the individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
As amended.
As amended.
Thank you.
Davis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Bungie?
Yes. So we have moved 315 from committee. Our schedule next week will have to remain fluid because of demands of the Senate Finance Committee, but I will attempt to give committee members as much prior notice as possible as to our possible meetings. Anything more to come before the committee? If not, at 2:24, we stand adjourned.